Well, hello again, everyone in Turdville. This is Turd Ferguson, and this is another in the exciting installment series of TFMR podcasts. Today we have a real treat. This is someone that I've been wanting to track down for quite some time, and I'm actually thrilled to make his acquaintance back at Freedom Fest in Las Vegas in July. Patrick Heller is the general manager of the Liberty Coin Service in Lansing, Michigan, here in the U.S. And he's been doing this for a long time, and in fact, was honored just last year by the American Numismatic Association as the 2012 National Coin Dealer of the Year. And that encompasses something over like 5,000 coin dealers nationwide. So Patrick is very well respected in the industry. I'm sure you've even read from time to time, because certainly I've linked some of his articles he's written, and so I'm sure you've read some of his stuff from time to time too. He's very well versed and knowledgeable in this arena, and it's something with which I'm not, or in which I'm not well versed and knowledgeable, that's for sure. And so I wanted to bring him in and get him introduced to everybody. So Patrick, thank you for taking a few minutes to step into Turdville. How are you this morning?
I'm fine, and thank you for the invitation.
I bet you've never been to Turdville before, huh?
I have to say I have not.
It's beautiful this time of year, actually, once the leaves start changing. it's got a lot of sightseeing around here. But anyway, again, thank you for taking a few minutes. I wanted to start first. You had written something just this week on this salted bar controversy, where first it was one 10-ounce bar that made the news in New York, then suddenly it was 10 10-ounce bars. The guys over at the Silver Doctor site found a company in China that actually will make you as many counterfeit gold bars as you'd like. And so I know you'd written about that. I just wanted to get your thoughts on the matter and how it might relate to investing in coins instead.
Okay. The problem with making a counterfeit gold bar, or taking a genuine bar and removing some of the gold and then filling it with something to sell as a real thing, has a difficulty in trying to make it match the physical dimensions and weight of a genuine bar. In practical terms, tungsten is very close in specific gravity to gold, so about the same mass has the same weight. The very few counterfeit bars or altered genuine bars that have showed up in the past tended to be larger size bars where holes were drilled in the side to extract maybe half of the gold, and then tungsten was basically poured in. It didn't have to be struck, and then gold plugs covered up the damage.
Mm-hmm.
This involves some 10-ounce size gold bars. And just looking at the pictures of them, I'd say you could easily have removed about 80% of the weight, which is a higher percentage in the past. But it looks to me from the pictures, and obviously I don't have complete information on this, that the tungsten looks manufactured rather than just something that was poured into a drilled hole.
Yes, it does.
So there is more possibility that the whole thing could be a complete fabrication. And there are companies, for instance, in China that advertise they can make tungsten products with gold covering. And that includes their claim that they would make gold bars like that. Or if it is some operation that has taken genuine bars and found a way to extract a higher percentage of the gold, there's a lot of capital costs in developing that technology where you're not just going to do it to 10 bars and then stop.
It's, right.
And you'd have to do it over a larger quantity of bars to make it pay for itself.
Do you have... I guess I read about, you know, I hear about methods of trying to test your own, if you actually own a 10-ounce bar or several of them, of methods that you can employ yourself to try to test. I mean, do you know anything about that, Patrick? Is that, I mean, do you have anything that you
a little
recommend?
Bit. There are x-ray machines, and my company owns one that unfortunately only goes a very short distance into the surface of the metal. And the companies that were stuck with these bars, at least one of them have a similar machine, and it was used, and it showed that to the depth that it tested, that it was pure gold.
Mm.
They won't go all the way through the object, so these machines aren't the end-all of protection. I've seen reports saying that the rate that sound or sound waves pass through metal varies enough between tungsten and gold that if you had some kind of, well, it's almost like an ultrasound machine.
Right, right.
Such as used for testing for pregnancy, that could distinguish between the two. The Perth Mint issued a statement a couple of years ago talking about the issue of counterfeit and altered genuine gold bars, saying all the stuff that they purchase that they themselves did not make, they have melted down and found the number of fakes to be exceedingly small. And when they tested it with the ultrasonic tester, they had about 10 instances where the tester indicated a suspicious bar because of the ultrasound variation. But when they were melted down, they did all turn out to be genuine.
Hmm.
So not even that is a perfect protection, although it may be one that's skewed towards being more cautious.
Yes. Well, you know, and with prices where they are and only continuing to go higher, I think we're all confident in that trend with the ongoing currency devaluation. The incentive and the profit, I guess, profit margin will only widen for folks that are willing to try this. And so there's been a lot of discussion that, maybe a better way for investors, savers, people that are worried about their using metal, physical metal for their financial protection, perhaps they should be going the route of coins instead, which are far less likely to be salted or counterfeit in any way. When it comes to coins, obviously you're an expert in this. How do you feel about just stacking the regular gold eagles or silver eagles or maples versus maybe more collectible items instead? Do you have a feeling one way or the other?
Yes. For the overwhelming bulk of people, it's more sensible to stick to bullion-priced items. You have a closer spread between the buy and sell price. You need to do less study personally about exactly what you're purchasing in terms of, is this the product as described? I'll either say, for instance, a 1 ounce gold American Eagle, or it won't say that.
Right.
And then it's also bullion items are more liquid. The gentleman that founded Liberty Coin Service in 1971, Bill Bradford, for the 10 years that he worked here, did interviews with people selling their coin collections. And he commented to me that what his experience was is where someone started collecting rare coins and continued to do so for at least 5 years, that when they sold, over 90% of collectors made a profit on their purchases. But on the other hand, he talked with a number of people that heard that owning rare coins was a way to make money, and they didn't want to be collectors, they just wanted to do it for the money. And of those people, he said, over 90% of them lost money.
Sounds like futures traders.
It can be. And some of the reasons he deduced, and they're pretty commonsensical, is collectors study the market more to get a feel for which products may be a better value today than other products. Such as you look at the market trends over time to do that. You also need to yourself or be able to trust someone with grading skills to make sure that the quality you think you're buying is really there.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, can be a significant problem.
Yes.
You also need to avoid a lot of situations where there are companies that use a form of bait and switch where they may offer what looks like a good value on a bullion price product, but when you call to purchase it, their salesmen are trained to not accept such orders, but instead to sell people something that is priced as collector's items, but not necessarily an attractive value for the customer.
And you know, and it seems that some folks go down that collector item or antique line of thinking, if anything, just because of some of the confiscation laws of the 30s, you know, that they think that, you know, maybe old silver dollars and old gold coins are actually judged as, I guess, antiques and maybe not subject to, or then they're not worried about, and that helps them to control that concern in their mind about future confiscation. I guess, do you recommend one versus the other, Patrick? Or, I mean, obviously there are risks involved in both, but should people kind of diversify across, you know, collector antique type coins versus bullion? Or, I mean, is it just kind of individual preference?
It's more individual preference, but even for customers to become collectors, I do recommend that they have a good position in bullion priced items. Many people that are buying products from my company have the thought in their mind that my heirs are going to get this, I'm never going to sell it. But in real life, things come up where people need to raise funds, sometimes desperately, and you just have to sell something right then wherever the market's at. If you have some bullion priced items, the spread between buy and sell is less, so that, say, if you have to sell now, you can sell it, and if the price holds steady and you're able to get back in later, you can buy it and have sort of a less of a transaction cost that way. Whereas with the collector's items, you may buy at an average or peak time in the market, pay a high price for it, and if you're forced to sell, you're forced to sell at a valley in the market.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you just have bullion, you can just sell that and not be so concerned where it is in the cycle.
Right, right. Well, and as you mentioned, there are risks, though, involved in when you start collecting. There are risks involved in buying bullion, obviously, too. But just from the collecting standpoint, I mean, I would want everybody to call you or drive themselves to Michigan and visit Liberty Coin Service, but not everybody's going to do that, obviously. So do you have some, some tips, some advice for folks out there as to, you know, as they try to find a trustworthy and a good, honest dealer to work with? I mean, do you have any advice you'd want to pass along to folks from your years of experience?
Sure. A good idea is to become familiar with a number of dealers just to get a feel for how they do business and how they will work with you, because you do have a variety of customer service strengths or weaknesses. You might find a particular dealer who is very strong in a market niche, but that's not the market niche you want to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And I do know some dealers that they'll handle products outside of their market niche, but in effect, they're just the face of a transaction, and they're really subcontracting through another dealer the actual obtaining of the merchandise and figuring out pricing. And the dealer you might be working with in that situation isn't as knowledgeable about the merchandise. It's good to have a long-term knowledgeable dealer who's willing to answer questions and explain things. And that is an advantage of being able to visit a local coin shop, is just to look at coins and see some features of why is one coin one quality and another one not,
mm-hmm.
or examples of damage to coins that really affects their value that unfortunately not every dealer will disclose such information to potential customers.
Well, I suppose,
even if you end up not dealing with them, at least it increases your education.
Right, exactly. It's some valuable experience just kind of going out and talking about things. How do you, and then I guess in kind of the bulk quantity kind of stuff, I see people on my site that talk about mercury dimes, or they buy bags of I guess we call it junk silver, that kind of stuff. I mean, do you have a feeling of, or an opinion about those types of transactions? Is that anything that you handle? Or
I do handle my company pretty much everything in the rare coin market for the last 2,500 years. And I'll give you an example of something that I don't recommend right now. There's a national company that a few years ago started marketing the 90% silver half dollars as somehow being a bit of a rare coin, where they would sort the Franklin half dollars out of a batch and offer just Franklin half dollars at a premium price to 90% silver. They would sort the Walking Liberty half dollars out into a separate batch and mark them as a little higher price for being older coins.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'd sort out the 1964 Kennedy half dollars and market them as being worth a little more than the others because they don't have as much silver worn off. The company has sold enough of that on the market as a whole, it costs more now to buy 90% silver in half-dollar form than it does to buy in dimes or quarters. But throughout the last several decades, when people are selling these coins, you normally get the same price per face value, whether it's dimes, quarters, and halves.
Hmm.
So my recommendation is don't buy the half dollars now if it costs you more than the dimes or quarters for the same amount of face value.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, obviously you know your stuff, Patrick, and it's great to be to get a chance to talk to you. Like I said, I often linked your writings at TF Metals Report. How often do you write columns, and what are some of the sites where they're published so that people can follow your writings?
I write a weekly column for numismaster.com.
Okay.
That's linked to Numismatic News. So every month or two, one of those columns are picked up and appears in an issue of Numismatic News. I also write one or two a week for coinweek.com. I also write every other month an article on collectibles for the Greater Lansing Business Monthly. And you find that website at lansingbusinessmonthly.com, and you look for columns and click on collectibles. I write at least one column a month for the coininfo.com website.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then in the past, I have written columns for coinupdate.com. And they still maintain an archive there where you can search by author's name and find those. I do have, beyond just many of the articles being about the precious metals and financial markets, you will find some discussing numismatics. And I also, from time to time, have articles on consumer protection issues to deal with precious metals and rare coins.
That's very important as well, obviously.
And my own company has a website, libertycoinservice.com, where I post the monthly newsletter that I write for the company that, I have a lot more space, so it's 4 to 6 pages an issue. And I do discuss precious metals and rare coin issues.
And you do that one, you say that's kind of a longer article, Patrick, and that's about once a month?
Once a month.
At libertycoinservice.com. And for everyone out there that can't make it to Michigan, but would like to, obviously they can go to libertycoinservice.com and get some information, but if they wanted to speak with you specifically or email you, how would they get in touch with you, Pat?
Well, just call my company. Nationwide phone number is 800-933-4720 and ask for me.
Kind of like what I did this morning.
Yes.
How about that? And I tracked you down.
Uh-huh.
Well, Patrick, thank you very much. I think that this is a good starting point for folks to kind of understand some of the risks and but also some of the advantages of dealing with rare coins. I hope we can maybe speak again sometime in the future and go into some greater detail. But for now, I think we'll stop there. And I very much appreciate you spending your time and sharing some wisdom with everybody here in Turdville.
Thank you very much.
Patrick, have a great rest of your day.
Same for you.